Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the podcast. It is always up to speed with Formula One. Mark Daly here tonight, flying solo at least for a couple of minutes. I'll be joined by Tim Haraney from the TSN Racing Pod. He's on deck here, and Tim and I got together a little bit earlier on this evening to recap the events at the inaugural Miami GP over the past couple of days. No Mark Hamilton tonight. Mark has been under the weather for the past couple of days. He really soldiered through the weekly show on Thursday night, but I talked to him a little bit earlier today. He had no voice left, and I just said to him, Mark, you know what, just take the show off, take the night off. He said, you know, I'm just not good to go, and he's been working so hard with the interviews lately that he really deserved the evening off. Otherwise, I don't think he would have lasted more than a couple of minutes. Anyways, he'll be back in a couple of days for the show, and we look forward to connecting with him again. Anyways, like I said, we've got Tim Haraney on deck, but before we do that, just going to run down the race qualification, sorry, not the qualification, talked about that in depth with Tim, just the classification for the very first Miami Grand Prix. Max Verstappen for Red Bull winning this one, 3.7 seconds ahead of Charles Leclerc. Carlos Sainz finally getting back to some positive news, coming home third and rounding out a double podium finish for the Scuderia Ferrari. Sergio Perez, fourth for Red Bull. George Russell and Lewis Hamilton, fifth and sixth for Mercedes. Seventh was Valtteri Bottas for Alfa Romeo. Esteban Ocon for Alpine in eighth. Alex Albon for Williams in ninth. And Lance Stroll rounding out the top 10 for Aston Martin. Now in the driver's standing, Charles Leclerc still on top in the driver's championship with 104 points. Max Verstappen second with 85, slowly closing in on the Ferrari driver. Sergio Perez, 66 points, which is good enough for third in the Drivers' Championship. George Russell, who's had a very, very good start to the 2022 World Championship, fourth with 59 points. And then Carlos Sainz slowly clawing his way back up the Drivers' Championship with 53 points, and that puts him in fifth. On the constructors' side, Ferrari has 157 points, only 6 points ahead of Red Bull. Mercedes, 95 points. McLaren, fourth in the constructors' championship with 46 points, pardon me. And then Alfa Romeo rounding out the top five with 31. Then going down the rest of the constructors' championship, Alpine, AlphaTauri, Haas, Ferrari, Aston Martin, and Williams rounding out the top 10. Well, not the top 10. There is only 10 teams in Formula One. But as of today, after the Miami Grand Prix, all teams have now scored points in the 2022 Formula One World Championship. Anyways, that is enough from me here in Mission Control. Like I say, got Tim Haraney waiting here on deck, and we're going to recap the inaugural Miami GP. Enjoy.
Joined by Mark Daly from the Scuderia F1 Pod. If you want more from the Scuderia F1 Pod, you can get them on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and download their podcasts on Apple, Spotify, actually wherever you get your podcasts. And joining me today is Mr. Mark Daly. You can get him on Twitter at Mark Daly. Did I get all that right, Mark?
You got everything right, except you forgot it's at Mark Daly F1 for my Twitter. Formula One-ized it, if that's even a word.
I thought I got it all.
Hey, it's been a long day for you, brother. I'll let that one pass. It's all good.
It has been a long day. Just getting in. We are taping this 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm just getting in from the racetrack, and Mark, you're just getting in from dinner.
From dinner, yeah. It's still early here on the West Coast. We were doing Mother's Day and everything. I mean, it was awesome. I mean, it was like prime time on a Sunday afternoon. The race went green at 12:30 Pacific time. It was perfect. And then there was still time to do normal Mother's Day things after that. It's been a great weekend. It's been a fun weekend.
Sorry to cut you off there, but you know, Mark, you've watched Formula One forever. Mm-hmm. And you've seen a ton of races. You've mm-hmm. seen a load of different tracks. You've seen a number of different Sporting spectacles. Mm-hmm. For the Miami Grand Prix, did you get a different feeling about this particular race compared to others?
Yeah, you know, I got to give them like major props because for a first time event, I mean, there's obviously things that didn't go right. There was going to be hiccups, but I thought the presentation, the way that it looked on TV, like all weekend long, it looked amazing. The facility in and around Hard Rock Stadium looked amazing. And I thought the track itself, I know there were complaints from the drivers just to come, you know, concerning how dirty it was. That was obviously one of the hiccups with this one. But I think that the design of the track and the facility itself, it was fantastic because I was really blown away at times watching over the course of the past couple of days that this is a track that's not going to exist in a week. All those grandstands are going to be taken down. Those barriers are going to go. And the thing is that I said to you a little bit earlier that even though I knew this was like a road circuit, a temporary circuit, it felt more to me like a Mexico City, even though, you know, like the section right at the end where the old stadium is just before they come into mm-hmm. the pits. It had that temporary feel, but it didn't. It looked really good compared to, say, a traditional street circuit like Monaco. And the design to it, I think it worked really good. I know that the race organizers want to maximize and make some tweaks here and there to really extract all the potential they feel the track has. But I think for first opportunity, like right out of the gate, I think they did a really good job.
Yeah, being boots on the ground there for me, I would say this is the most hyped up I've ever seen a Formula One race. I mean, there was more spectacle happening off of the racetrack than there was actually on the racetrack because the race was okay. Mm-hmm. Qualifying was exciting, don't get me wrong, but everything that stood out the most to me about this race was everything that was happening in the paddock. It was the who's who of, you know, sports, entertainment, you name it, social media, everybody was there. It was wild that way, off mm-hmm. the charts. And the fans, there were so many fans, Mark, like so many, and treating these drivers and team principals just like absolute rock stars, dude.
That's awesome.
I was leaving, when was it? It was Friday. I was leaving the TV bullpen, and we just finished our round of interviews with all the drivers. And I was walking behind Daniel Ricciardo, and I was just saying to him, like, dude, have you ever seen anything like this? Because it's nuts, man. And he's like, bro, he's like, it's off the chain. And I'm like, right? And as soon as he said off the chain, we like walked into paddock, and he got swarmed by people. I got like booted. I was walking shoulder to shoulder. I got booted out of there. Right? Everyone was in there trying to get. He was trying to like. He was doing his best to pictures taken with people, be as friendly as possible. But there was people like trying to hug him, like getting like right, like face to face with him.
Oh wow!
And I'm just thinking like, this is part of the job, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, like these guys must be starting to get used to this, but it's next level here, man. It was next level. Like,
this is crazy.
Everybody was yelling at Toto Wolff. The selfies that people were trying to take with him as he was, you know, cruising down the paddock. And like, they were great with the fans. I have to tell you that. I mean, everybody was really, really great with the fans. And they're just so ravenous, Mark. I've never seen anything like it before. Like, and I've been around racing my whole life. Like,
the one thing I have to ask you, did Martin Brundle ever get to meet Patrick Mahomes this weekend? You know, I'm not going to hate on Martin. I think he does a great job, you know, but I mean, he's had a couple of grid walks now that haven't quite gone off the way that he intended. But I thought that this one was probably a little less controversial than the last one. I thought it was a bit of a funny moment, notwithstanding. Poor old Martin.
I didn't get to see it, so I can't comment, but I got like a ton of text messages while it was going on, and people were explaining to me like what he was doing, and I'm like, wait, like what's happening? Like, how did he mistake someone for Patrick Mahomes? And then, you know what, like, it's being in the media center, and like I know some of the media, but from around the world. But this weekend, I got to learn even more because there's more. There's more of them, and I can understand like how you don't know who certain athletes or celebrities who they are, like if they're American. Like I understand that because they're used to their celebrities.
Yeah,
in Europe, you know what I mean, and in the UK, and Martin Brundle could probably rattle off to you every single soccer player who, you know, plays for Chelsea or, you know, plays for Man United or whatever, right? I can't do that. I mean, there's no way. If I went over there and I had to do a grid walk, I wouldn't know who I was talking to. I literally wouldn't know who I was talking to.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
right?
Like, I get it for some of it for sure. Like, I really do. It's understandable after being in that media center, just how difficult I think that actually can be for sure. But Patrick Mahomes, man, like he's the highest paid. What, please? Like, he's like the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. Like, come.
Full disclosure, like I haven't made that mistake, but given the opportunity, I would love to meet Patrick Mahomes. You know?
Oh yeah, that'd be awesome.
Totally.
It was awesome. I bumped into Zoe Saldana.
Oh wow,
that was really cool. She's super nice, by the way.
That's awesome.
Very nice lady. Yeah, very very nice. Tom Brady as well.
Oh, cool.
Who else? They're just like Will I Am. That was cool. He's awesome.
Nice, nice.
Saw Michael Jordan. Who else did I see? Saw David Beckham.
Well, he's the owner of the MLS team in Miami, isn't he? I can't remember what his official title is. He was the one that sort of really pushed to get the team there. It's been going, I think they started almost like 10 years ago. It took them almost a decade to get that team up and running. But
yeah.
I mean, Bex is kind of like one of those guys, one of those celebs that everybody knows regardless where you live, right? I mean, a lot of people will know David Beckham just because he's David Beckham, right? So
Global, he's like one of those global superstars.
For sure, totally.
He's like the Lewis Hamiltons.
Exactly, you know? Exactly. Yeah,
like everybody knows who Lewis Hamilton is. Everybody knows, like around the world, what Lewis Hamilton looks like. So it's like, it's not. He's like, yeah, like David Beckham's in that realm for sure.
Totally.
But there was so many. Like Ashton Kutcher, saw him.
Oh, cool.
Did
you ask him, dude? Where's my car?
No, I didn't. He had his son with him, so I didn't want to like.
It wasn't appropriate.
He had his son with him, so I didn't want to like get in there. And you know, it's like still kind of a pandemic going on, so I just didn't want to like get into his face and be like, oh my god, you know, I can picture and like have him be like, whoa, relax, bro. So you know what I mean? Like, so a lot of the celebrities and everything, I kind of kept my distance a bit, but Zoe Saldana, I actually said like hi to her because I literally bumped into her and she was like super, super nice. It's crazy here, man. Like it was absolutely, absolutely wild. But those are the things that were going on behind the scenes. Mark, what did you think of the track as a whole in terms of racing and qualifying?
Well, qualifying I thought was like a really exciting, and when we saw the Ferrari front row lockout with Charles and Carlos P1 and P2, I couldn't help but wonder, up until what happened in the race today, I was wondering, is this going to be the race of redemption, not only for Ferrari but especially for Carlos, who's had a couple of tough outings in Imola and then in Australia going back the last two races, and then Charles and Ferrari as a whole trying to redeem themselves after that own goal in Imola 2 weeks ago, and they looked really, really strong. I was kind of thinking, well, was Imola perhaps a bit of a flash in the pan for Ferrari, for Red Bull, and now it's going to kind of go back to what we'd seen maybe over the first couple of races of the season. And it was really interesting because I was coming out of qualifying and thinking perhaps this is a Ferrari suited track, especially the front row lockout, and it turned out to be a little bit. Not quite as that. I don't want to say that race was decided on the first corner, but certainly Max really getting his elbows out, as he say, to force his way past Carlos in what I thought was a super aggressive, but like exceptionally well pulled off pass. I mean, it was one of those ones, he was going to look like a hero or a zero. I mean, if he collected Carlos, it would have been that one moment where they would have been climbing out of their cars at turn one. But he really pushed. And I think what the advantage was for Max was it didn't give that opportunity for Carlos to kind of like run interference and let Charles run away and build up a lead. And so, well, ultimately, I think that Max had the faster car. And but it was very, very timely. The track itself, I think, has a lot of potential. I think it's got like a nice rhythm to it. I like that sort of combination of corners, sort of about two-thirds of the way through. Was it turn 16 to 19 or whatever, mm-hmm. before they go on mm-hmm. that long straight that's about three-quarters of a mile long around the back there. I thought it was really kind of cool because they're really kind of short, snappy corners. You get a little change in elevation as they go up that little knoll there, and then they come around at the back straight to one of the DRS zones. I thought that was pretty cool as well. But yeah, I think ultimately the one thing that was kind of frustrating was just the track surface itself, and that a lot of guys were just complaining that it was just so dirty that they didn't want to risk going off a line, and they were predicting that perhaps that would lead to, you know, a lack of overtaking. We saw overtaking, but maybe not as much as we'd expected based on the races we'd seen so far this year. What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, I like the track. On the Thursday, I was talking to a friend of mine who was doing hot laps for guests and celebrities that were coming to the race, and he had just gotten finished doing his test drive on the Thursday so he could learn the track. And I said to him, like, hey, you know, well, how is it out there? What's the track like? He's like, it's awesome. Mm-hmm. He's like, the surface is starting to get ripped up. I'm like, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. He's like, if you go over to turn 7 and turn 17, he's like, the ground is literally peeling away. So whatever the surface is whatever the type of tarmac they were using wasn't setting properly. And so it literally was getting ripped up. And he's like, there's no way when the F1 cars hit this on Friday, that it lasts. He's like, this is going to get worse. This whole thing's going to get torn up. Mm-hmm. So we got to the track on Friday morning, and sure enough, the FIA had notified us that they'd repaved it. They had to repave T7 and T17 and lay down some asphalt. Well, it got worse because T17 got torn up. Like the F1 cars literally ripped it up. Mm-hmm. So again, this is Saturday morning, they repaved a huge chunk of T17, and talking to the drivers about that, you know, a lot of them were saying that it was difficult because they were going from a stretch of asphalt that was reasonably grippy because it kind of started to go from a green track to a rubber embedded racetrack onto T17, which was extremely slippery because there was no grip. So it was really ruining some of the drivers' qualifying laps. And so it was really, really hectic. Daniel Ricciardo actually was mentioning it to me that he said it was really difficult to try and get the car settled down when you made the transition from the two pieces of asphalt. And he said that played a part in his Q3 lap time.
Hmm.
And so Lando Norris told me that it was a really difficult track to drive only because that there was only really one true racing line. He said, as soon as you start to get off of the racing line, he said the tarmac is so bad that you would literally be off and into the wall. He said, there was no real like wiggle room, so to speak. And it's the type of like asphalt that they're not really used to.
Okay.
And I think what they should think about doing is maybe resurfacing it with, whatever the Saudi Arabia track that whatever they use, because that needs to be done in like a higher temperature. And it was really hot here. Like track temp was like 50 degrees, man.
That's right.
Like,
yeah. Yeah.
It was really hot. And so like, I think what they should probably do is maybe think about resurfacing it for next year. I think that it would make the racing a little bit better. Not to say that the race was bad, but yeah, it was an interesting note.
So just to jump in here, Tim, for a second, that when you were saying that Lando was saying there was truly only one racing line around that track, was that incident that eventually sadly ended Lando's afternoon when Pierre went off the racing line and we saw him kind of going all over the place, was that in part to do with the fact that he wasn't on the racing line? I never heard it confirmed if he actually had any mechanical issues after that, or was it a combination of the both of those things?
Yeah, so what happened was Pierre told me that when he had contact from behind by, I believe it was Fernando Alonso,
yep,
who told Fernando, actually said to me that pass wasn't on, and he took blame for it. Like he was actually apologetic for what he'd done. But that contact actually broke something in the right rear. So Pierre decided to try and go for one more lap. The team said, well, if you're feeling okay, try one more lap. So Pierre tried one more lap, and he said, as soon as I went through this one corner, it was something to do with the wheel rim actually broke, kind of like gave out. And that's kind of what made him go off the track a bit. And Lando just couldn't avoid him. There was nothing Lando could have done. And he said, Lando said he tried his best to get out of the way, but it was something that just happened. There was no real ill will between Lando and Pierre. It was just a racing incident that just happened. But yeah, it's a shame. I mean, I don't think Lando thought he was on for points this weekend. He kind of made mention of that to me after the race. But for Pierre, though, it's a real shame because Gasly was having a super, super strong weekend. I mean, Mark, he qualified the car seventh. It's incredible.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Totally. I mean, if you look at outside the top three rows, I mean, we had Ferrari, Red Bull, then you had Bottas, who qualified really good on row three beside Lewis Hamilton. You know, the two former teammates, that was a bit of a juicy way to start the race. And then, like you say, you had Pierre Gasly on row four. Row four next to Lando. And then you had Yuki and Lance rounding out, the top 10 and qualifying on row five. And yeah, I mean, Pierre's like one of those guys. I mean, when it's on for him, things really go well. I mean, look, he's a race winner. I mean, he's had some fantastic moments in his career, but it's, I guess, that old saying, when you're hot, you're hot, when you're not, you're not. And it just wasn't his day today. And that's so frustrating after, like you say, he qualified so well on Saturday. I thought that the starting grid, especially after we saw the top 10 shootout, I thought there was some really interesting kind of threads to pull on and, excuse me, things to watch during the race.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some of the other drivers, like you had mentioned, Valtteri Bottas, let's talk about his weekend for a bit, Mark, because right off the hop, guy crashes in free practice one. So it doesn't really get off to a great start, does it?
No, no. And again, he had that moment right at the end of the race. I mean, he was ahead of Lewis, ahead of George, and you're just kind of thinking that he's got to be like loving this, you know, ahead of his own team, his old team. And I think that Valtteri's done a pretty good job so far at Alfa Romeo. I think they're, you know, he's punching above his weight in that car and doing some things you wouldn't really expect to see Alfa Romeo doing. I mean, maybe you can go back a couple of years when they were still Sauber and it was Charles's first year, because he was doing a lot of really amazing things compared to Marcus Ericsson that year. I mean, it was night and day. And I think that Valtteri is doing similar type things with that car so far this year and putting it into positions. Just goes to show the quality of a driver that he is. And not that I have anything personally against Lewis or George or Mercedes in general. I just thought that it would have made for a great, maybe not a headline, but it would have been a great storyline to see him come home in front of his former team and his former teammates at this race, but it just didn't turn out that way. And unfortunately, he got passed by both of them right at the end of the lap there, just what was only maybe three or four laps from the end of the race, and poof, you know, that's that really good result, you know, top five finish, you know, kind of like disappeared. I mean, still finished in the top 10, still finished seventh, but it could have been a lot better. And maybe that was just kind of maybe kind of underline that it was an okay weekend for Valtteri, but it had a lot of ups and downs and was ultimately a little bit frustrating and left some points out there on the track.
Yeah, one of the things I'm noticing the most with Valtteri is his demeanor. He's a lot more laid back now than what he was when he was with Mercedes. And I think that those one-year contracts that Mercedes had him on just really didn't give him
not a fan of those.
That, yeah, I just didn't really think that really gave him the confidence I think he needed. And then getting like a more of a secure future with Alfa Romeo and a multi-year deal. And plus, you know, the car is actually really good. You know, Guan Yu Zhou was telling me if he hadn't have had to retire the car, he most likely would have gotten points. And Zhou has been doing great this season. He's been a standout driver as well. But I mean, Valtteri's just been, he's just on another level at the moment, Mark. I think this is some of the best driving I've ever seen from him. Like, so if we take into consideration, this is a brand new racetrack. Nobody knows it. I mean, they've got in the simulators, and like I was talking to most of these guys, and like they were even telling me, like, yeah, the simulators were great for this track, but like they're not like 100% accurate. They don't give you all the bumps. They don't actually give you a whole bunch of undulation where some of these corners did have. They don't give you a lot of the camber that some of these corners had as well. And so for Valtteri, I was so upset for him when he crashed and then couldn't make it back out for the next practice session. I was like, he's not going to have a good weekend. This is going to be such a difficult weekend for him. He's going to have to spend the next practice session learning the whole track instead of like figuring out a qualifying setup and taking the car to the limit on a track he doesn't even know. And I was like, it's going to be a tough weekend for him. And then here we are into qualifying, and Guy puts it P5. I think he was one of the more, like, him and Max were standout performances for me this weekend. Like, Valtteri's it was incredible this weekend.
Yep.
And I'm really excited for him for the rest of this season. And if they can keep developing this car and keeping this mojo going, I'm really excited. I think he gets podiums this year, Mark. I really do. Like later in the season.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if that happened at all. Like I'm feeling really good for the guy. But like you say, I mean, he doesn't have that pressure of like having that microscope on him almost each and every race. That 1 year almost, well, it was always like 1 year with an option kind of deal, right? That he had with the Mercedes. And I think now that he is the undisputed number one at Alpha, he has that multi-year deal. He can just go out there and focus on what's happening on the track. I mean, plus, you know, the guy brings a wealth of experience as a driver, and he's been in the top team in Formula One in the past decade. All the experience that he brings just from the developmental car or point of developing a car is just invaluable to a team like Alpha. I mean, they just must be lapping it up. I mean, it's a great situation for them. And to me, he seems to be a guy that's racing without pressure on his shoulders. I mean, sure, there's pressure that he faces every time he straps himself in that car and goes out for a practice or a qualifying or race or whatever, but that's the normal kind of pressure you'd expect on any driver. But he doesn't have that extra added pressure of driving for Mercedes, and I think he's really thriving in this environment. But to maybe kind of extrapolate on this a little bit, I feel that Valtteri Bottas 2.0 is Sergio Perez at Red Bull, because, I mean, let's face it, I mean, it took Checo two-thirds of a season last year to really find his groove at Red Bull. He had a one-year deal then. He gets it right at the end of the year. I mean, he played a real pivotal role, crucial role at Abu Dhabi, that last race of the year, to really, you know, the whole Minister of Defense thing, but he's really been on it this year, right? I think he's done a pretty good job. I mean, he's had some mechanical really issues, but then the same thing, he's on a one-year contract now, similar, you know, age bracket as Valtteri, and then the pressure of racing for last year. Well, they weren't constructors champions, but I mean, they could have been if he'd nailed more points. I just kind of feel that he's racing with the type of pressure that Valtteri had last year and for the past several years. And Valtteri must be kind of, he must recognize that, but think, you know, thank God that's Checo and that's not me. I'm just going to go out here and drive.
Yeah, I think Checo's been great too. I mean, if we take a look at his qualifying times from Saturday, and, you know, he's not far off of Max, and by not far, I mean like a tenth. And that's in every like single session. He's just losing just about a tenth to Max. And given that Max didn't have a ton of running time on this track, like, either, and we'll get to that a little bit later, I still think Sergio's doing an awesome job this season. I really do. You know, in the race, it was a little bit difficult for him at the end. And I think that, you know, the pass on his attempted move on Carlos Sainz was a little opportunistic. I don't think that one was truly on. And to his, you know, defense, I think he just drove a great race. And he's just up again. You know, once you start getting Carlos Sainz back into the mix here, Mark, like, it's, you know, the things for Red Bull and the things for Ferrari, like, things are, like, these things are separated by millimeters, man. Like, it's just not much, is there?
Well, I thought, especially with Sergio's attempt to try and get around at the end of the race there past Sainz. I mean, why not? If you can make it, you're going to look the same thing like Max did at the beginning. If you're going to make that pass, you're going to look like a hero. If not, then it was worth a try. I mean, the thing is, he didn't damage his car. He didn't collect Carlos. Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing was, considering the amount of time left in the end of the race, considering that that Sergio was, he was struggling with some mechanical issues in his own car, he was going to get one opportunity, and it came and it passed, and he didn't make it stick, but it was worth a try. But I was, as you were talking there, I was just looking at the qualifying time. So in Q1, the delta between Max and Sergio was about a tenth of a second. It was about 4.5 tenths in Q2, and then under a tenth of a second in Q3. So I mean, there, you know, that delta was bigger in Q2, but I mean, when you look at it, you know, the other two qualifying sessions, he's right there at a tenth of a second or less. So I mean, the margin between the two is not very big compared to some other driver pairings that we've seen throughout throughout any age. I mean, I think he's doing some pretty good things there, you know, when comparing him against his teammate, which is the ultimate comparison in motorsport, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And Sergio now third in the Drivers' Championship with 66 points, and obviously in front of him is his teammate Max Verstappen and Charles Leclerc. Yeah, let's talk about this race a bit. I know we're kind of jumping around and all that, going from like topic to topic to topic, but yeah, let's start with Charles Leclerc. I mean, for Charles, I mean, that was a difficult first stint for him. I don't think the Ferrari treats the mediums as well as I think the Red Bulls does, but I mean, Mark, this championship lead that he has is slowly dwindling away.
Yeah, well, that's why that race in Imola a couple of weeks ago was just so painful. I mean, a season isn't won or lost on a single race, but if at the end of the year, Max ends up defending that world championship and he beats Charles by, say, 10 points or less, you know, you might be looking back, it, you know, come, you know, Christmas time and reflecting on the season that that was. And that could be one of those key moments where it's ultimately those points are what led to the championship to slip through his fingers. Because, I mean, if you look in the Constructors' championship, I mean, that big lead Ferrari had in the Constructors is dwindled. I mean, they got 157 points. Red Bull is now only 6 points behind with 151 points. And then on the the driver's side, I mean, Charles still has a bit of a buffer. He's got 104 points compared to 85 for Max. So he almost has that one race win in his pocket. But the thing is that he can't afford any more slip-ups like we saw in Imola a couple of weeks ago. I mean, today, like, that race really needed that safety car. You know, as bad as I felt for Lando, and he had another frustrating day out at the office, but that race really needed something to kind of spice it up right at the end there. And the safety car kind of, I know it's kind of an artificial way to kind of like back up the pack and everything like that, but it did kind of set things up nicely, because you could tell that once, you know, that the safety car went back into the pits, they went back to racing. It was really interesting because you had a Red Bull Ferrari, Ferrari Red Bull. And the big question is Charles going to be able to make that move on Max? Is Sergio going to make that move on Carlos? And it was fun to watch both of them. And to both of their credit, they got close to the cars that they were following. You know, and Sergio, obviously, like we just talked about, he tried to get around, make that pass on Carlos, didn't make it stick. But then Charles was also getting pretty close to Max's gearbox. And I kept thinking to myself in that last 7-8 laps there that if it comes, he's going to have one opportunity. And that opportunity never came. And I couldn't help but thinking, after the race was over, this is a good result for Max, considering some of the, you know, the issues that he struggled with through the opening portion of the season. And for Charles, second, you know, it's okay. It's not total redemption that they wouldn't have wanted after Imola. I mean, it would have been great to have that, you know, that front row lockout, win the race, and, you know, the perfect, you know, like scenario like Max had in Imola. So it was good, but it wasn't great. But certainly very much like his teammate Carlos Sainz, yeah, you're probably a little bit satisfied, but at the same time, you're going home tonight thinking, yeah, that could have been, it could have been better. It could have been better than what it was.
I think Red Bull has the fastest car if Max Verstappen is driving.
Yeah.
That's what I think of me. Every race that Verstappen has finished this season, he's won. And so for Charles Leclerc, that has to be a bit of a concern. And I asked him about that, and he agreed with me. But the thing is that with the Red Bull, I don't know if they have the qualifying pace that the Ferrari does.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that the two cars, and this is just from what I've seen, it's not from what I've heard, it looks like the Ferrari uses the tire differently in the race compared to what the Red Bull does. And today was a perfect Sunday, I should say, it was a perfect example of that, where that first stint, both of them are on the same compound. Only Leclerc gets that front graining first, where Max is able to kind of get that move done,
mm-hmm,
and then kind of zoom off into the lead a bit. And then you look at the race restart. Well, Max was telling me that actually he was worried that Leclerc was going to come by and pass him for the win, because he couldn't get the tires up to temperature enough. Like, he was really, really struggling with that. And I think you have to give him credit for keeping like a cool head at that moment, because it's easy for a driver, especially one who's in the lead, to do something silly, outbrake themselves, try and push the car too much when they know the tires just aren't there. And it can be a little psychological at that point, right? So, you know, we do have to give him credit for that. And I think that every race that he's won this season, he's been very dominant, like in the race itself. And I think this is some of the best, even though the races aren't getting, like, he's DNF'd two races. And even though we didn't get to see, you know, how all those would have played out, whether or not he would have won them or not, I still think this is some of the best driving in a race that he's done. And I think that he's learned a lot from that championship battle he had with Lewis Hamilton back in 2021. I really do. I feel like he's learned something. He just looks different. He acts different. He answers questions differently. So there's a little bit more maturity about him as he kind of goes through his process now. And I think for Charles Leclerc, you got to be worried about that. I mean, Max looks like the complete package now. He really does.
Yeah, totally.
And if we take a look at how the weekend went along, here's a perfect example. Has 14 laps in free practice one. Car gets put into the garage, mechanical issues. I believe it was something to do with, I think Christian Horner mentioned to me, it has something to do with the hydraulic line. The hydraulic line was free practice two. Free practice one was overheating, so they changed the gearbox. Free practice two, they had a hydraulic line issue that they had to deal with. So loses a ton of laps. He only has 15 laps on Friday. That's it.
It's not a lot.
That's all he gets. No, we look at you know how tough it is, Mark, for drivers learning tracks, right? It's hard.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not something that's easy. And if we look at his qualifying, taking the car to the limit on a track, he doesn't really know. And that's impressive. I don't care what anybody says. And I don't care if they say a car is great and whatever. That's really hard to do. That is not easy. You have to have a lot of confidence to be able to do that. And then we look at the race and just the start in particular. He hadn't practiced a start. He was one of the only drivers on the grid who didn't get a chance to do practice starts. And he gets Carlos Sainz into the first corner.
Yeah, you know, and that just, when you put it all into context like that, it really, I think, adds a little bit more color to Max's victory. Because like we said a couple of times throughout the course of the show so far, that maybe it wasn't the best spectacle on the track today. But if you look at the body of work and you look at what Max's weekend was like, it just makes that victory, that P1, just that more more impressive, does it not? Or am I seeing this? Yeah.
Absolutely. 100%. I think this was a really great win for him. I think this was that confidence win.
Yeah.
That's yes, we may not have the fastest car for qualifying, but we have the fastest car for the race. You just need to give me what I need and I'll get it there. I think that's what this was today.
Talking about confidence, I'd be interested to hear if this came up in any of your conversations with the Red Bull boys over the weekend. I mean, they clearly have a good car. It's lacking in some areas. They clearly have two drivers that are operating as close to top form as they can. We know when it comes to things like strategy and tactics and calls on the pit wall during, you know, on spur of the moment decisions during the course of a race, they're usually spot on. I mean, they're the masters of the double stack going back for years, right? But the one thing that just bugs me about Red Bull, and it must be a concern for them as well, is just the reliability issues. I mean, we saw it with that double DNF in Bahrain. We've seen it a couple of times. We saw it again this afternoon with the issues that Sergio had. That must be bothering them as well, because otherwise, you know, you would have to really consider them, you know, I wouldn't say favorites, but a definite, you know, that head of the title contenders pack right now. But for me, at least, there's just that red flag that I just feel that they push that car too hard, something's going to break. And I just can't shake that feeling, unless they have a run of five or six, eight races or whatever it is, and neither car has a mechanical issue going forward.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point that you make. You know, obviously, for this team, they have suffered greatly with mechanical issues. And like we've talked about before on this podcast, you know, it's easy to fix reliability. It's harder to make a slow car fast. So
yeah,
this car may be packaged just a tiny bit too tight. I have a feeling if they're starting to get overheating issues. I mean, so for Friday, track temp was around 40, 45, and then you move into Saturday and around 50. And I think the heat here did play a bit of a role in of Red Bull's mechanical issues. You know, even Christian Horner made mention of that to me on the Saturday morning, saying that, like, hey, we had some heating issues here on Saturday morning with free practice one, and we had to fix it. And then that led to another problem because we had to switch out a gearbox and we had to do a whole bunch of other things with the car.
Wow.
And so it'd be interesting to see what they learn from this weekend in terms of like updates and what Adrian knew he's going to do next with this race car, because they have a great race car. It's just trying to make this race car a better qualifying car, I think. And also at the same time, get the reliability under control, because the tighter you package these cars, Mark, I mean, the less heat is able to escape from them.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you should mention Adrian Newey, because every time I see him on the race broadcast sitting up there on the pit wall, it's like he can see the wheels in motion turning in his head. It's like mental note to talk to X about this on Monday. Talk to Y about this on Monday. We need to do X, Y, and Z about this. That you can tell like that process is just going on in his head. I mean, that's why he's one of the great engineers, one of the great designers that the sport has ever seen. And it's just really interesting. He's also such, I mean, at least from a public point of view, you don't really see him interviewed all that much. That, you know, they're not sticking a mic in his face during the course of a race. I mean, he's just so focused on things. And you have to think, if it's a problem for the drivers, that issue, it must just be driving Newey and his whole design team, all his designers, all his engineers, that stuff just must be driving them bananas.
Absolutely. I mean, you got to see that guy. It's like you're saying, right? You could just see the wheels turning, and he's a genius, man.
Oh, absolutely.
Like having Adrian Newey on your team, and this isn't the first time he's worked with ground effect race cars. He knew what he was doing when he started building this car. Like he knew right away. And that's huge when you factor in that they were locked into such a heated rivalry with Mercedes in 2021, and the fact that they wanted to win that championship, and it could have bled over into this car.
Yeah.
But if it wasn't for that guy, man, and obviously the team as well, but if it wasn't for Adrian Newey and having experience with cars that generate downforce from underneath, I don't know where Red Bull would be right now. I really don't. Like he's an absolute superstar genius.
Totally.
Let's talk about Carlos Sainz, because
okay,
you know, we've talked about him on this podcast a number of different times. We got hell, you know, last month because people thought we were slamming him. We were not slamming Carlos Sainz, but Mark, this guy on Friday cannot catch a break. Dude, he came off the track on Thursday. He came off of the racetrack through the little escape holes that they have for the marshals going into pit lane, smacked his head on the pole as he's trying to get into pit lane. And then on a Friday, guy crashes and destroys the car. I'm like, oh my God, this guy can't catch a break, Mark.
Well, hopefully today, after bringing it home, that this is that turning point that he needed. Because, I mean, talk about struggling. I mean, this last month or 6 weeks has just been a horrible time for yeah. Carlos Sainz. And for the record, I think he's a really good driver. I like Carlos Sainz. I mean, sometimes I think he kind of flies under the radar a little bit because he's not really like, he's not like a Danny Ricciardo. He's not like one of these big flamboyant, really extroverted personalities, but I mean, he's a very professional guy. I mean, he's lively in his own way, but I think by just nature, he's just a little bit of a quieter guy, but I think he's supremely talented. I think he's a very good teammate. I think he's competitive in his own right, but I mean, it's just like, if you could sort of like map out any bad scenario that could happen to the guy over the last 3 or 4 weeks, he's pretty much checked every single box. And I couldn't help but thinking, just even 3-4 days ago, just coming into this race weekend, it's just like, okay, what sort of weird things are going to happen to poor old Carlos Sainz this weekend? And then after like all those things you just mentioned, before the race, I'm like, yeah, that's totally on brand for, like, you know, spring 2022 Carlos Sainz. But I was really happy to see him, finish where he did and, you know, basically keep it very clean during the race. I thought for, you know, that right at the end there, the way that he played that whole scenario with Sergio trying to pass him. I mean, the way that he just, when they're going into turn one, he just sort of opened the steering wheel a little bit just so, you know, he didn't turn in and just sort of eased off a little bit, just allowed Sergio to breeze up the inside. And then he just carried on. And I thought that was a real heads up moment from Carlos. And I just hope for the poor guy that he can just put this, you know, this nasty funk behind him and just maybe just breathe a big sigh of relief. Is it, you know what? I made it through the weekend. I got a pretty good result out of it. And let's just forget April 2022 and the first 2 days or maybe day and a half of Miami. And let's look forward to Spain, Monaco, Canada, whatever's coming up in the calendar.
He's looking forward to Spain. He was telling me that. That's for sure. He's looking forward to getting back home.
I bet.
But, you know, I had to ask him some tough questions over the weekend. And, you know, one of them was just like, how confident was he getting with this, you know, race car? And I asked him that on Sunday after the race, given that, you know, he had a rough start to the weekend. He did. It was bad. It was really bad. But he managed to make up for it and come home with, I believe it was his third podium of the season. And, you know, I kind of said to him, like, hey, look, you know, he's starting to get more confident with his car, because I know you'd mentioned it to me before that it was something you were kind of working towards. And he's like, yeah, you know what? I am, you know, getting more mileage under my belt has really helped. Even though, yeah, I got third in the race today, and I'm paraphrasing, but even though, you know, got third in the race, it was still mileage. He was still collecting data, and he was still filling himself up with knowledge on what the car likes, what it doesn't, what it does on new tires, what does it do on old tires, how does it act when it has full fuel, how does it act when it has empty tanks, because the car changes a ton over as a race. So I think for Carlos in particular, it just comes down to that, Mark, you know, mm-hmm. just more mileage, more miles he can get under his belt. I think the closer he's going to get to Charles Leclerc.
Well, you know, I mean, let's not forget what happened in Imola and Australia. I mean, out of like the entire 20 cars on the grid, he had the least amount of race distance possible for two Grand Prix. I mean, he had half a lap. What was that? How many laps did he have in Australia?
Yeah, it was like a lap and a half.
And not even half a quarter of a lap in Imola, you know, 2 weeks ago. So in the past two races, he basically got two laps racing. I mean, that's like you couldn't get less if you even tried. I mean, you could if you just didn't show up to the paddock on Sunday morning. But this, that's what really blows my mind about this whole situation. But I mean, he did get a P3, he got a podium, and I just hope that, like I said just now, I hope he shakes his funk off and he can go to the next race and just build on something positive, you know. He needs it.
Yeah,
he
absolutely
really needs it.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with you on that. Moving over to George Russell coming home fifth. You know, I talked to George on Saturday after qualifying, because he was so quick, you know, Friday in free practice, and I was like, you know, look, George, I mean, like, not a lot has changed from Friday to today. I mean, what happened out there? Is it the heat? Like, what's causing the car to come, like, start porpoising again? Because at the beginning on Friday, the car actually wasn't porpoising at all. And then once we got to Saturday, the car was like bouncing up and down again. I'm just like, this is so weird. They haven't really changed much of the car.
Maybe it was porpoising because they're driving around the home of the Miami Dolphins. Okay, that's a bad pun. I'm sorry. I take that back.
You're like waiting to throw that one in there, right?
Yes. I retract that statement.
Incredible. But yeah, he was saying to me on Saturday, like, look, he's like, this car was a different beast today. That's what he said to me. And he wasn't too thrilled about the race coming up. He didn't know how that was going to go. He had no clue. And then in come the race. He was telling me that the first 15 laps, he said, were really tricky. He said, really, really difficult for him. He said, but after that, he's kind of like the hard tire, like really started to come to life. And he was able to like make up some ground. And then next thing you know, he's into the top 10. And then he's higher. And it was for him, he didn't think he was going to get that far. And then that safety car, that virtual safety car, helped him a ton. But that's the thing, though. He put himself, and people were making excuses for him at the track, too. And like, okay, I mean, sure. But you have to put yourself into that situation to receive the luck. You do.
Yeah, totally. You manufacture your own luck. I mean, he kind of took a gamble, but I mean, it was a calculated risk. I mean, when you go to a street circuit, the odds are pretty good. At some point, somebody's going to put it into the wall. Somebody's going to, you know, their engine's going to let go or something. They're going to pull up on the side of the track, and there's going to be a VSC or a full-on safety car. And it's a smart gamble. If there's any kind of gamble, that's a smart gamble. And again, I think we talked about it with Hammy there the last time. I think after Imola, that, you know, when it comes to George, and he's been out qualifying Lewis. He's had a little bit, some better moments than Lewis so far this year, is the fact that he's had to think on his feet at Williams the past several years, because he hasn't had the best car out there, and he's had to learn to do more with a lot less. And I think that this situation again today was just, you know, George just being able to think on his feet and just, you know, be very smart about it and think there's a good chance that this safety car is going to come out at some point. I'm going to try and push as far as I can and just hope that the timing works out. I mean, again, if it doesn't work out, you know, it's a risk worth taking, in my opinion, and it worked out perfect for it. And he was rewarded justly for, you know, that faith in that strategy. That wasn't too long of a long shot, and you reap the rewards from it.
Absolutely. And George, doing in the championship standings, also fourth, I have 59 points. I mean, pretty incredible from George. He's got a fourth place, fifth place, third place, fourth place, fifth place. Like, hearing from Total Wolf after the race, you know, he was just saying, look, they don't understand the car completely. They're still scratching their heads over what happened from Friday to Saturday. They still don't know yet. They feel that the upgrades that they did bring, which were a Band-Aid solution, mind you, put them in a good position to learn more. Toto feels that once they get the car dialed into the sweet spot where this car really operates, they have a very fast race car. And they do. They really do. You know, Friday practices showed that they do. It's just whatever happened in between Friday to Saturday qualifying, whatever changed, either it was track temp, or maybe they had made an adjustment and went the wrong way on something. Maybe it was just tire pressures. But whatever it is, this car is so sensitive to change that that's what's really throwing them off. And it's giving them a hard time understanding it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because Hammy and I have been talking about on our podcast the last couple of weeks that maybe the W13 is this car that they know, or they think that has this incredible potential, but we think that at some point it goes up on the wall in the boardroom, because they walk away and cut their losses, because now they got to focus on 23. And it's just like, we know this could have been an amazing car, but we were never able to extract its full potential because of the cost cap and, you know, all these components and all these various things that are locked in that we can't touch. And, you know, we have to get it right out of the box, and because we know we're not going to be able to develop it as much as we want to or able to over the course of the season. And I think that's where they're at right now. But, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit now about Lewis Hamilton, because I thought it was, and I know this is, this is interesting the way that they sort of cherry pick the nice radio transmissions. And there was one exchange between Lewis and his engineer, Bono, asking Lewis about, the tires and stuff like that. And he's like, why are you guys asking me this? And, shouldn't you be making that decision like in the pits? So I'm going to ask you as a driver, what's your thoughts about that? Like, are you with Lewis? Do you sympathize with him? It was an interesting little exchange. I mean, it was just a couple of words back and forth, but it was a fascinating exchange between Lewis and Bono.
Well, we have seen in the past, Mark, Lewis actually question the tire changing strategies and why aren't they doing, something different, and him telling them like, hey, I need new tires. We have seen that, right, in the past, where this was a little bit different. It was quite odd, actually, because usually we're seeing Lewis like dictating what he wants, when he wants it, all that kind of stuff. So it was a little bit strange. It really was. I still think that's a little bit of hard luck in terms of the strategy. And I think that for Lewis, he's a 7-time world champ. He should know if he needs new tires or not.
You think.
You know what I mean? Like he should know. He'll know that. Now, whether or not that radio message was taken out of context, we won't know because the way it was slapped together and put on the broadcast.
Yeah, we got like 15 seconds out of something that might have been a 2-minute conversation or something that's 100%. Going back and forth for a much longer period of time. Totally agree.
100%. So that's where I kind of put all of that with the radio message. Because I got a lot of questions about that on Twitter, on Instagram, everywhere. Like I got a lot of questions about that. And that's what I think. Because I wasn't on Lewis's comms this weekend. Like I usually am. I wasn't there this weekend for that on his radio. But there is something I feel that there's just something he's missing. And I think that we've talked about it before with George being at Williams, and I asked George about it this weekend, and he sort of downplayed it. But
really,
I think I don't want to say I don't believe him, but I just think there has to be something that George has taken away from his time at Williams, right?
Yeah.
And as a competitor, you don't always reveal all of your secrets. And
sure.
Enough. At the same time, I think George, technically, he's very sound. And I think he's finding different ways of getting this car just exactly like where he needs it to extract the lap time. And I think what maybe some people might be missing is that Lewis hasn't gotten slower. Like Lewis is a 7-time Formula One world champion. And now he's got a teammate that's on the same level as him. They're very much equal in terms of talent, skill, all of it. Toto even admitted it to me on Saturday. Like he just said, like George is one of the next generation. All right. He's won a championship in pretty much everything he's driven. He is a talent, true talent. So he's right up there with Lewis. The thing is, and what I'm excited for is once Hamilton really figures this car out and figures out what he needs from it to extract the lap time. I think he's these two guys are going to be fun to watch. Well, they really are.
Yeah, the thing is, over the past almost decade, watching Lewis at Mercedes, it was always like watching history, because it was always something special watching him go out there and just throw down that lap time when he needed it, when it came to qualifying or he needed to for a pit stop or whatever it was. Like how many times have we sat there over the years, Tim, and you see Lewis go out there, you see his lap time, and you'd be like, he just did what? Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. I mean, and the thing is, he just wouldn't do it occasionally. It was consistently race in, race out, year in, year out. It's historical. It was absolutely amazing. And that's the thing that you raise a very good point there. And when you put it in that context, it's just like, yeah, if Lewis can get this car figured out, I mean, it could be scary, right? To see him get back to it. It's just like, he's adding 2 and 2 together, but he's not quite getting 4 right now. He's getting 4.25 or 3.9 or something like that. And he's close, but he's just not quite there yet.
Let's move on to Esteban Ocon. Absolutely incredible drive from Esteban. I got to sit down with him for a one-on-one interview on Saturday. It was my first time actually really getting to talk to Esteban. I got a good 20 minutes. We were talking everything. Like,
he seems to be a bit of like a cool guy, you know, to sit down and talk with.
Yeah, he is a very, very cool guy. He's really super nice, down to earth, easy to have a conversation with. There's no BS, and he gives it to you straight. So it was tough to see what had happened to him on the Saturday in FP3, you know, when he crashed. They actually wheeled his new Alpine tub right past me in the paddock. And I had to look, and I was like, is that a new tub? And then I looked at the guys who were pushing it. I'm like, that's Alpine. I mean, does Ocon need a new tub? And so I like ran down there, and I was asking the guys, like, hey, like, what's going on in here? Like, is Esteban going to make it out for qualifying? They're like, nope.
I'm
like,
oh, dear.
Did he tub the car? And they're like, yep. I'm like, oh, ouch, man, he's going to start dead last. Guy starts dead last and finishes in eighth.
Yeah. Great drive. I mean, to go from that and, you know, not even get on the track and qualifying and take it from the back of the grid and take it into the points as far as he did, I think is exceptional. I think that's, you know, probably the drive of the day that just didn't get any recognition at the time, because everybody's focused on Charles and Max and Carlos and Sergio, because that's where the action was. That was a big sexy battle up front. But I mean, Esteban had an incredible Sunday afternoon. That's impressive. That really is impressive.
Yeah, and he was happy about it. He was thrilled about it and all. He was like, you know, I got a little lucky with the safety car. Is what he's telling me. And I'm like, well, look, man, I'm like, you kind of got to make your own luck at this point, right? And he's like, yeah, that's true. I'm like, yeah, I'm like, that was pretty awesome. Alexander Albon, also great drive as well from him. He was running new rear wing on his car, new floor as well. Nicholas Latifi not getting the same, but Alex doing another great job in the race. I was talking to him as I was leaving the track, Mark. I was like, yo, Alex, we were walking up the stairs. I'm like, so you're going to keep the hair dyed red?
Keep
then,
it red?
Right? He's like, ever since you dyed it red, dude, you scored, you know, scored points, because he's got to score more points now. And he started laughing. He's like, yeah, bro, I got to keep this. I'm like, okay, good. Well, if you're going to do it, you got to do the whole thing red, because it's just red on the top. And he started killing himself laughing, whatever. But that was really cool to see Alex. Alex put in that performance today. Pretty impressive.
Totally. I love the gutsy move that Williams made. It kind of went against the grain last year. I mean, everybody just expected that they were going to sign Nyck de Vries, and kind of like Mercedes would parachute another one of their drivers into that team. And they kind of went their own way, which I thought was great. And so far through these first couple of races, or several races now to 2022, Alex, I think, has really repaid their faith in him. And I mean, that drive that we saw in Australia, the way that he managed those tires, I mean, that was brilliant. I mean, he gets into the points again today, and I'm feeling excited for him, and I'm feeling excited for the team. I mean, this is a team that has scored pretty much 0 points in the constructors over the last several years, and I mean, 3 points isn't a lot, but for a team where it's been, well, I mean, saying it was slim pickings would be overstating the amount of points that they've brought home in the last number of years. So I mean, it's a good little story in and of itself, and it's good to hear that, you know, Alex can laugh about these things, because to me that tells me that he's a guy that's in the right headspace as well, and is you know, happy where he's at. I think it's great. And then also Lance getting into the points, that was a weird story, like that they had to start from the pit lane, both Aston Martins, because that they had to change out the fuel because it was getting too cold.
Yeah, it was actually quite strange, but I mean, really excellent drive, you know, from Lance today. I mean, obviously, you know, he had his battles with Kevin Magnussen, and you know, that got quite spicy at times.
But, is there any battle with any driver and Kevin Magnussen that doesn't get spicy?
God, I love Kevin Magnussen. He's awesome. But yeah, you know, I think for Lance, it's been a good couple of races for him and the team. It was good to catch up with him. It was good to see him. I hadn't seen the guy like face to face. Well, I've seen him over Zoom and such, but But yeah, in the paddock, sitting down, talking to him, you know, it was nice. It was good to see him. And like, this was a strong drive. Started from pit lane.
Yep.
And came up and was able to score points. I mean, Mark, it doesn't get much better than that.
No, I mean, just like, I mean, maybe not as quite as dramatic as Esteban after, you know, having to have the tub in his car replaced. But I mean, still respect to Lance for taking it from the pit lane into the points. I mean, if there was ever a definition of a hard fought, hard won single point, you know, to Lance, that must feel like, you know, 20 or 30 points. I mean, just considering where he came from and what he had to do just to get that one measly little point. I mean, good for him.
Yeah, for sure. And good for the team too. I mean, it really does look like Aston Martin's really starting to figure this car out and move it forward. You know, Lance was admitting it to me that on Saturday that, you know, he doesn't really feel that this is a Q3 car just yet. And judging by the lap time, if he had of taken his lap time that he did in Q2 and applied it in Q3, he still would have been 10th fastest. It wouldn't have been enough. Even though his Q2 time was faster, it just still wouldn't have been enough. I think he was a couple hundredths of a second slower than the ninth place car. So, I mean, all in all, I think for Aston Martin, a pretty productive weekend as a whole. You know, Vettel and Mick, I mean, you know, Vettel doesn't really toss blame around on that one. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it was kind of like 50-50, wasn't it? You know, we've had these debates in similar situations over the weeks and months and years past. And, you know, you can make the arguments for, you know, both for and against Seb and for and against Mick. And at the end of the day, I think you just write it off as a racing incident. You know, it's kind of unfortunate considering the relationship that these two guys have. But I think Martin Brundle kind of put it best and said, you can't be friends with other racing drivers, you know?
Yeah.
But it was just unfortunate. I mean, Seb, I think, was doing a decent job as well. And Mick was right up there at one point where he was running, about eighth or something at one point during the race. And it looked like, to me, he feels like a little bit like George Russell, that, you know, when George just could not score a point and where he was in the points and then something unfortunate would happen right at the end of the race and that point would get yanked out of his hand. I kind of feel that it's kind of happening to Mick, maybe not as in a dramatic fashion, but I just feel that he's going to get that points finish that he really deserves. And I think it's going to come pretty quick. I think it was just unfortunate it didn't happen for him this weekend.
Yeah, I think so too. This was a weekend, I think, for Mick to build the confidence back up again after that huge accident he had in Saudi Arabia.
Oh man, and, yeah.
You know, I don't think that really did his confidence well, because then going into Australia is a little shaky, and then Imola still again a little shaky. But I really think that I really do think that he drove really well this weekend. And hey, look, I mean, he was on pace with Magnussen this weekend. And that's all you can look at.
You know, I want to say something about Mick, like I've kind of, said about Lance in the past. You know, like, I hate these kind of easy throwaways for guys like Mick and Lance, because, you know, the knock that people have had against Lance for years, oh, he's only there because he's Lawrence Stroll's son and Lawrence has more money in the world than he knows what to do with. Yeah, okay, his dad is rich, but, you know, Lance has to have talent or else he wouldn't be in Formula One. It's just not a paycheck. And the same, there's some of these comments, maybe not quite as many about Mick that I've heard about Lance over the years, but oh, he's only in Formula One because he's a Schumacher, he's Michael's son. It's like, yes, he is. Yes, he's got that name. Yes, his dad is a multiple seven-time world champion. Yes, he's the nephew of another Formula One race winner and Ralf Schumacher. But he just didn't get in there just because he was born into the right family. He has talent in his own right. I mean, he's still a young guy. I mean, in his first year in Formula One, he didn't have the greatest car to begin with. He didn't have a teammate that was really, you know, going to push him to, or, you know, maybe not that maybe K-Mag is really mentoring him, but I mean, he's an experienced racing driver, experienced Formula One driver. He's a good benchmark and example to be, you know, up against in the garage to, you know, sort of measure yourself against. And I think for Mick that, you know, that's only going to be a good thing. I think those points finishes will come because, you know, he's not just there because he's got the right name. He's got talent in his own right. And, I just hope he doesn't become the new George. He deserves those points.
Well, before we take off, let's talk quickly about Nicholas Latifi.
Sure.
This was, I think, Nicholas's best weekend.
Mm-hmm.
A couple things that some people should probably know. He's not running the same equipment as Alex Albon is. He actually has the older floor and I believe also the older rear wing as well. And then we also have to take into some weight consideration into that, because I believe kind of appears from some people I've spoken to that Alex is actually, he's about, I think it's about 7 kilograms lighter than Nicholas's car. And, you know, that costs some time too. I think that costs a bit of time too, but just from watching him on track this weekend, it looks like the confidence is starting to come around. It does. And qualifying, I think, actually really showed that, because he wasn't very far off of Alex, you know, whatsoever. As we get into the race, well, that's a little bit of a different story. I think, you know, if some upgrades maybe come for Nicholas in Barcelona, I think we may see Nicholas being right on par with Alex. I have a feeling.
Yeah, well, and that's exciting to talk about, because, you know, he's had a bit of a rough patch here to start this season as well. And if that's the case, if he's can close that delta and he can be close to what Alex is doing, I mean, we've seen Alex put in the points a couple of times already, and that's exciting if you're Nicky, because you're thinking, hey, if Alex is doing this, if he's been able to bring home points in a couple of races this year, I should be able to do that too. If I'm getting improving my car, and hopefully some weird things don't happen on the track. So I'm crossing my fingers for him, because it's not fun to watch guys struggle. And I mean, it was kind of rough there to watch him in some of the races this year. So I'm pulling for him. I'd love to see him get into the points as well, because he's been in F1 for a couple of years now as well. Hasn't had the greatest car. But like I say, I mean, if Alex is able to stick it into the points in 2022, I don't see any reason why Nick Latifi can't do it as well.
Yeah, totally agree. Mark, let everybody know what you got going on.
Yeah, so we've got two shows a week dropping, usually on, Sunday nights. Mark Hamilton's been doing a lot of interviews lately. Those usually drop on Monday mornings. Our usual weekly show drops Thursday night or Friday mornings, depending whereabouts you are on the globe. And you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, everywhere where you download podcasts. And you can find us on Twitter at ScuderyF1Pod. And you can follow me on Twitter at Mark Daly, and that's with an L-E-Y at the end, at Mark Daly F1 on Twitter.
Mark, thanks very much for your time. Really appreciate it. This has been a lot of fun, man. Like always. Really enjoy doing these race recaps. Same. With you on the Sunday. We should keep it going. I'm Tim Haraney. If you want more from me, you can get me at Tim Haraney on all forms of social media. And I'll be back later in the week with another podcast for the TSN Racing Pod. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you all later.
All right. Once again, big thanks to Tim Haraney from the TSN Racing Pod for getting together with us to recap the Miami Grand Prix. Interesting race. Not that exciting for the best part, but it was great to see it get off the ground, and hopefully they make the improvements necessary for next year. And that's it for us. We'll be back on Thursday night with a regular weekly show, and hopefully Mark will be back and feeling up to snuff again. Until then, if you want to get in touch with us, by all means, send us a tweet at ScuderiaF1Pod on Twitter, or you can send us an email at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com. That's it. That's a wrap. Have a great week, guys. We'll be back in a couple of days. And until then, take care, have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye for now.